We're at the intersection of acceptance and change in mental health therapy and learning about DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. DBT, it was originally used as a therapy for people with suicidal thoughts, borderline personality disorders, but according to a State Department of Corrections release last year, it's proven to be an effective therapy for youth who have trouble managing their emotions and behaviors. States like Massachusetts, Washington, Utah using DBT in their youth correctional facilities. How do you feel about this form of therapy in prisons? Do you think it's effective? 800-642-1234. Henry Bay is a licensed psychologist at the Center for Behavioral Medicine in Brookfield and a certified DBT clinician. Henry, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Good morning. We also have Leslie Baird Chapin, a clinical psychologist and DBT consultant for the Wisconsin Department of Corrections. Leslie, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Leslie, give us a working knowledge of what DBT is. Introduce us to this therapy.
Yeah, so DBT is a mindfulness-based cognitive behavioral therapy. And as you said, it has research evidence backing its effectiveness for treating really complex and high-risk problems, including suicide attempts, self-injury, and impulsive behaviors. It's a pretty comprehensive treatment that includes five components: skills training, individual therapy, skills coaching, consultation team, and ancillary treatments. And each of these has a different function.
Yeah, and we're going to break down those areas. Henry, what do you think are the hallmarks of DBT? How do you see it different from other forms of therapy?
Yeah, I think DBT does a uniquely good job at, like you said, balancing change and acceptance. I think a lot of therapies, especially manualized therapies, focus just on the change end of things.
Mm-hmm.
Which for clients can sometimes feel invalidating or not like the therapist is really slowing down and listening. And DBT does a good job of kind of accepting the client for where they're at and kind of looking at why everything that's happening in their lives, including their behaviors and emotions, make perfect sense given what has happened before in their life. And that combined with a lot of more intensive phone coaching. Clients have access to oftentimes 24/7 phone coaching, and it incorporates a wide variety of skills and tools taken from different kind of other therapies, all used together to help. So it's a lot more high-powered than other treatments.
Yeah, you know, Leslie, the root of the word is dialectic, which had me scrambling to remember philosophy with, you know, Socrates and Plato. Can you explain the philosophical connection to opposing sides and that two opposite ideas can be true in this therapy?
Yeah, and that's one of the core pieces of this, is that dialectics, and like you said, that is recognizing that everything has polarity, everything has an opposite, there's a point and a counterpoint to everything, and that both can coexist, that there's always a kernel of truth in the other side. And that the goal is that we're trying to bring those sides together to coexist, which creates a greater truth and a greater understanding in the long run. So this is interwoven into every single principle throughout the treatment. So acceptance and change would be the core dialectical components, balancing that at the same time, there are things that we cannot change and we have to accept those things, and that in order to change things, we have to fully accept them as they already are.
We're talking with Leslie Baird Chapin and Henry Bay. They're both psychologists practicing DBT. It's a therapy for people who have trouble managing emotions and thoughts, behaviors. You can join in. Are you currently pursuing some form of mental health care? What questions do you have about dialectical behavior therapy? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's connect this to Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake, Leslie, youth facilities that are using these therapy techniques with youth inmates. First of all, what have those training sessions look like for staff in learning how to use DBT?
So we started training staff directly in January of 2021. Obviously, the pandemic posed some challenges. Mm. And so we accomplished a lot of this introductory training virtually using Zoom. And we broke it into 6 half-day sessions, which were an introduction to the treatment, an introduction to basic behavioral principles, things like reinforcement and shaping new behavior. We talked a lot about validation strategies. And then staff were also introduced to all of the skills that they'll see throughout the treatment.
So, you know, 4 or so months later, how is it going?
I think it's going really well. I've been really impressed. So they started running skills training groups in the facilities in mid-March. I've gotten the ability to sit into, I think, probably 5 or 6 of those groups now. And the group facilitators are doing wonderfully. A lot of the youth are responding really positively. And I think that probably the biggest changes that I've seen over time is the relationship building between the staff and youth in some of the growth team meetings that we have implemented to sort of help support the treatment.
Henry, how might you see this form of therapy used in correctional settings? What do you see?
Yeah, a lot of the behaviors that youth are engaging in that end them up in these facilities, when you dig into it, often are related to dysregulated emotions, dysregulated thoughts, dysregulated relationships. And so because of that, that's exactly what DBT treats. And so oftentimes, you know, coming into these settings and giving these young adults tools that they didn't have before to better manage emotions, to better manage, you know, behavioral urges, you start seeing that it kind of clicking for them, and they start being able to practice these things that they didn't know before. And it really introduces this new tool set to manage big emotions, right, big beliefs, that is really transformational in changing behaviors.
Henry, can you tell us a little bit more about the roots of this? A psychologist, Marsha Linehan, who developed this therapy, and, you know, she was a Zen master, is a Zen master. How does Zen fit into this? What did she set out to do?
Yes. So Zen has a lot to do with the mindfulness component of DBT, with the concept of accepting reality for what it is in the moment. Radical acceptance is a big component, a big skill in DBT. And I think Marsha Linehan, when she was creating this therapy and incorporating this mindfulness, then realized that there's not enough acceptance of the present moment, right? When we look at what causes human suffering, oftentimes it's not accepting the pain that is in our life, right? Pain is inevitable. And it's when we don't accept it and we try to reject it that kind of leads to intense suffering. And so she realized, wait a minute, we need to help teach this as a skill and incorporate this into therapy.
Leslie, what do you see as the role of radical acceptance when you look at youth in correctional facilities like Lincoln Hills? How do you incorporate radical acceptance?
I think everyone needs radical acceptance. Everyone needs this whole, all the components and skills, you know, related to this treatment. So I think that youth need radical acceptance the same way as the staff that they're working with need radical acceptance, the same way that their parents need radical acceptance, the same way we all do, which is exactly what Henry said, that pain is an inevitable part of life. The pain that we encounter might be different. It might have different levels of intensity at different times. And rejecting and bucking that pain, pretending it doesn't exist, denying it, pain minus acceptance will lead to further suffering. And so there are some things in life that we need to accept exactly as they are in order to help us really access that life worth living that we're after.
Hmm. We're discussing DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, with a pair of psychologists, Leslie Baird-Chapin and Henry Bay. Have you participated in DBT? What was your experience like? What is access to mental health counseling like in your area? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more on DBT here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about regulating emotions and behavior and the impact of DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, on youth inmates, specifically in Lincoln Hills. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Department of Corrections called DBT a game changer last year, helping it move from a traditional incarceration setting to a facility focused on rehab, focused on treatment. Has DBT helped you through challenges in your life or made you more resilient? What aspects of the therapy techniques resonated with you? Join in 800-642-1234. We have clinical psychologist Leslie Baird-Chapin, who is vice president of Paquette Center for Psychological Services. And psychologist Henry Bay is certified in DBT. They stay with us. Leslie, can you give us some concrete ways to manage emotions without being overwhelmed by them? Can you kind of walk us through a setting when DBT is used with a therapist?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And so DBT obviously is more than just the skills, but the skills are sort of a backbone component of that. And knowing when to use the skills is also a very important piece of selecting the right ones and coaching the right ones. So a lot of this would depend on what the problem is, mm-hmm. and whether we're looking for sort of short-term tolerance or long-term emotional change. So all of this starts with that core component of mindfulness. If you can't observe it, then you can't do anything about it. So it's having a plan to practice mindfulness and know what you're looking for. And when you observe this particular thing, then to implement, you know, your next piece of the skills plan.
Okay.
So we have,
so it could be like a behavior or something that, you know, you do or hear yourself saying, internalizing something going on inside you, maybe external as well.
Correct. Yep. So you might notice, for example, when my heart is racing or when I'm having this thought or when I'm balling my fists or when I start to do that. Yep. Any of those things could apply to sort of that observational aspect.
And then where does the cycle go from there?
So in the moment, it's important to sort of recognize how regulated you already are. And if you are really dysregulated, then oftentimes you're turning to the distress tolerance skills. This is a set of skills that helps you tolerate distress in the moment. And we have our crisis survival strategies that come within this package. So you might be, when you're kind of past that skills breakdown point, it's really hard to think because you're so dysregulated. It's really hard to refocus. The crisis survival strategies are probably where you're going to want to go. And there's a whole host of skills for this, everything from being able to distract yourself or, you know, use temperature to change sort of the temperature of your face to help down regulate quickly, using intense exercise, using paced breathing. There are a lot of options in the skill package, and that's part of why we want patients to sample skills so that they know what their go-to skills will be in those moments.
Is it difficult for people to recognize when they're in a moment like this, or is it crystal clear?
I think it can be difficult in the beginning. So when people are highly emotionally dysregulated, oftentimes they might not realize that until after the fact. That's when those woulda, coulda, shouldas kind of kick in. And so that's one of the very important components of mindfulness and being able to enhance that awareness of when you're coming up to this point of elevated emotion, where that elevated emotion really starts to become dysregulation.
Henry, I'm wondering, how do you convey to a youth in prison that you can still have this mindfulness, you can still have some control, even, you know, in your darkest days? That seems like a difficult stretch with juveniles who feel like they've lost all their control.
Yes, it is. And yet they take to it super quickly. I think when we first introduce it, we get that response of like, what? Like, I can't do that, or I'm not going to do that, or why would I do that? And so one of the the big things in DBT is mindfulness practice. Every time we have a skills group, we start with practicing mindfulness in some way, paying attention on purpose to something. And after a while of practicing that, the light bulb kind of just turns on naturally. And all of a sudden you start hearing these teens talk about, yeah, I used my mindfulness skills in that moment. And I noticed that, you know, my muscles were getting tense and or my face was getting flushed. And it starts becoming part of the day-to-day conversation when they describe how they're trying to change their behaviors.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Henry Bay and Leslie Baird-Chapin. They're both psychologists who practice DBT. We're looking more closely at this therapy with your questions. Have you practiced DBT? What was your experience like? What is access to mental health counseling like in your area? Are you seeking therapy? Join in at 800-642-1234. So, Henry, you know, with outside the realm of prisons, with a distressing cancer diagnosis, for instance, could you use DBT skills to balance that uncertainty of what's going to happen with your cancer and with hope at the same time? How would it work in a dire medical situation?
Definitely. So this is where I think DBT skills really shine, actually, partly because of the element of radical acceptance, of accepting. Sometimes I help clients accept the unknown, right, in that situation with a dire medical situation, and they're waiting on test results, or they're going to have to wait 3 months to know if they're going to live or die. It's how do I cope with that distress and accept it in the present moment and still engage in things that bring me a sense of happiness, a sense of peace. And so there's a whole skill set in the distress tolerance module that Leslie mentioned called the improved skills that are all about, if we're going through a really difficult time, how do we make the moment a little bit better? Mm-hmm. Not just how do we cope with the pain, but how do we actually make it a little bit better? And so there's skills like making meaning out of the pain you're going through. You know, different forms of imagery, different forms of prayer to try to improve the moment,
yeah,
rather than just cope with it.
I imagine, Leslie, you want to be optimistic, and yet you don't want to be in denial.
Correct. And all of this is in service of creating the life worth living for the patient in their perspective with the situation that they have.
And so where do these DBT skills shine then with the patient when you look at these components and distress tolerance, for instance, and kind of working between that left brain and right brain thinking? How does DBT find that clarity?
I think that it really comes back to mindfulness. Again, like being able to recognize what is happening for you, how much of this is driven by judgments, what you can observe to help you know what you need right now, to know if you're accepting or if you're changing, you know, which pathway you need to take. And like Henry said, when you see this click for patients, when they get to the point where they're using these skills independently, it's a game changer for people.
You know, at Lincoln Hills, we've known for a while that the relationship between the staff of Lincoln Hills and the inmates, the youth inmates, it's very tenuous. It's very tense. But relationship between a provider and a client is really important in DBT. How do you get over that?
You don't get over it. You build it. We have to build it and strengthen it. So this isn't working around bad relationships. It's building effective relationships. And that is one of the huge focuses in our implementation efforts right now, is helping people to build authentic, genuine, professional, treatment-oriented relationships with youth. And certainly there are, you know, I could understand why people would be concerned about some of the relationships that have sort of been in the forefront. There also are really solid relationships within the facility. I've seen those the people that I've been escorted through the facility by have clearly very positive relationships with the youth. And so we're trying to pick out some of these folks that are doing this really well and helping to sort of bring them in the forefront and helping to encourage other folks to kind of modify behavior in a way that's going to be relationship forward.
Hmm. So what I'm hearing is saying that there is trust. There are these pockets of trust with staff there, and you're really trying to hone in on that behavior and build it up. We're talking with clinical psychologist Leslie Baird Chapin and licensed psychologist Henry Bay. They are in DBT. They've used this approach to treat people with personality disorder, high-risk behaviors, and now at Lincoln Hills. Your insights, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're discussing dialectical behavior therapy, specifically in the youth prison setting. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. DBT, it consists of these key things: mindfulness, as we've been talking about, effective use of interpersonal skills, distress tolerance, that's the ability to manage an emotional incident without feeling overwhelmed in the moment, and then emotional regulation. We're talking about all of these components. Are you a therapist or clinician? What do you think of DBT in the clinical setting? What do you think of this intervention for youth in the juvenile justice system? Join in your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Parapsychologists with us, Leslie Baird Chapin and Henry Bay, they use DBT in their practices and stay with us. Dexter is joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Dexter. What is your experience with DBT?
My theory is this. My therapist mentioned it to me back in 2018 or 2019, and the first thing she did was challenge me to not work. She said, you don't have a problem with working. You have a problem with being still. And so she said, I want you to sit with it. So for the first 4 months, I didn't like her because I wanted to do something, always being busy, avoiding what I'm thinking about, not thinking about what I'm thinking about. And it changed my life. Just that one aspect. There are many others, but just that woke me up.
Dexter, how do you feel today?
Well, I'm better and better because I take the time to sit and be mindful of where I'm at, what I'm doing, why, and then challenging the different thoughts that come through my head and recognize where those thoughts originated from. Are they benefiting me, or who is that talking to me?
Mm. Henry, you first. You know, challenging, always being busy.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that. I think this is a wonderful example and experience. We are, in our current day-to-day lives, oftentimes so busy and just go, 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 especially if we have thoughts and emotions that we're not quite sure how to sit with or we don't want to sit with because of how distressing they are. Sometimes we can almost distract through work, distract through constantly being busy. And when we slow down and sit with what's going on in our heads, at first it can be really distressing. It can be really emotional because we're not used to that. And over time, right, as we learn to sit with those feelings and thoughts, and as we learn to kind of work through them and not avoid them, it really can lead to a sense of peace and a sense of mastery where we feel like we don't have to avoid those things. We can handle them now.
Leslie, what came up for you from Dexter's experience?
I love this story, and I give his therapist a lot of credit for having some adept and attuned skills in problem solving because, it sounds like she identified that the problem that existed was avoidance. And the dialectic that exists with avoidance is that it can actually be really adaptive to avoid things in the moment when we need to. But just as Dexter highlighted, in the long term, that can actually perpetuate a lot of distress because it's avoiding a problem that's an underlying problem that's not changing. And part of that kind of goes back to accepting the problem as it is. And in order to do that, you have to face it and sit with it first. So I love that story. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Leslie, you know, DBT shares some traits with cognitive behavioral therapy. Can you explain what sets DBT apart? What's the difference?
Yeah, so DBT actually is a cognitive behavioral therapy. Okay. It's a mindfulness-based cognitive behavioral therapy. So it's kind of like all DBT is CBT, but not all CBT is DBT.
The acronym soup.
Right, yeah, right. So DBT certainly takes a lot of things from CBT that are not different. So like skills and functional assessment of behaviors and, you know, even more recently, mindfulness has become a big component of a lot of CBTs. But DBT does have a lot of specific emphasis. So the focus on dialectics, for example, is new. And I think Henry explained that really well, that a lot of treatments are just pretty purely change focused. Mm. So incorporating that balance with acceptance, the focus on mindfulness, not only for the patients, but for the provider. In order to practice comprehensive DBT, you have to have a mindfulness practice yourself as a clinician. I think the structure of behavioral targeting is different. So in comprehensive DBT, we have a structure that starts with any life-threatening behavior and then directly addresses any therapy interfering behavior on the part of the patient or the therapist. And then any quality of life interfering behavior after that. And then, of course, bolstering behavioral skill. So having that sort of hierarchy of targets is something that's pretty different. And the focus on a specific protocol for assessing and addressing suicidal behavior.
Henry, in the clinician community, you know, Leslie is saying there, you have to really be connected and you know, think DBT, endorse it, if you will. But in the clinician community in Wisconsin, is there any difficulty in finding providers who practice DBT?
There is. There's a lot of difficulty. There are very few programs in Wisconsin that do comprehensive DBT. I think you can find lots of places that offer what they call DBT, which usually is a DBT skills group or therapists who are informed in DBT skills, which is great, but it's not the full package. Mm. And the treatment was researched as a full package. And so, you know, I think we really are in need of a lot more training resources to get other teams on board with doing full comprehensive DBT. And so there is, I know at our clinic, we have a long wait list often because there's just not enough full adherent programs in Wisconsin.
Let's bring in Beverly now in Madison. Hi, Beverly, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, my name is Beverly. And yeah, when I lived in Minnesota, I was in counseling and I was learning DBT skills back in 2004, 2005. And those skills are tremendous. They're a lifesaver to people. I still, to this day, I practice DBT skills. Like when I get stressed out or something like that, I'll go to the distress tolerance skills and practice self-soothing techniques where like I'll wash my hands or wash dishes and feel the soap running over my hands and self-soothe myself to relieve the stress and everything and calm myself down. The skills are just a lifesaver, and it's because of DBT that it prompted me to go back to school at the age of 48 and go into counseling, and I'm working on my master's degree right now.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Beverly, thank you for sharing your story. Leslie, you know, nearly 20 years later, Beverly's still using these skills.
Yes, Beverly, I'm right there with you. I use these skills all the time, too. I love to hear that. Another wonderful story. Obviously, you know, she gave us some really good insight into the skills that are helpful for her and that have stuck with her. And she also highlighted another important point, that she had access to DBT in Minnesota. Minnesota actually has a wonderful statewide structure for being able to address some of the problems that Henry highlighted a moment ago.
Henry, you know, someone might say, well, when will my therapy be done? When will I be cured? Air quotes there. You know, Beverly is using these skills over a lifetime and also finding a new career direction. What are your thoughts?
Yes, I think that this is a wonderful example of how, like, emotions are not something to cure. Mm. I think emotions are something that every human being has and that we don't learn enough tools for how to manage emotions growing up. And so I think the underlying goal of DBT is not to say you have necessarily a mental illness that needs to be cured, but say you have emotions that might be getting in the way of your life. Let's work on tools to know how to manage them throughout your life. And then to going back to school and going to counseling is just a beautiful example of how DBT is part of working towards what we call a life worth living, thinking about what is it in life that I really value and want to do. And it brings in that change component, right? How do I want to change my life so that I really feel like I'm living a life that I feel like is worth living?
And Beverly, very practical there, you know, saying in that distress tolerance point, washing dishes and the therapeutic water and suds going over Beverly's hands. You know, Henry, can you speak to anything like that, that, you know, sometimes these can be little things that can make a difference?
Exactly. And that is the beauty of mindfulness. Mindfulness can help us calm down. It can help us distract our minds from things that are causing big emotions. And so we often talk about this concept of one mindfully, really focusing our attention, especially when we're really distressed, on something with all of our attention. And Beverly described wonderfully this idea of just focusing all of her attention on doing the dishes and the sensations of the water and the suds and really fully immersing herself in that experience. And that can do a lot for our ability to tolerate a difficult moment.
We have psychologists Henry Bay, Leslie Baird-Chapin. They're giving their insights on DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, in the clinical setting, in each and every day, in daily life. What is access to mental health counseling like for you? Are you looking for DBT? How is that journey going for you? Have you learned about DBT? What do you still want to find out? Still time to discuss. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Ken. Thanks for being here. We have a parapsychologist explaining DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, started as a treatment decades ago, now being used, incorporated into the state youth prisons, Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. Leslie Baird-Chapin is a clinical psychologist and DBT consultant for the State Corrections Department. Henry Bay is with us, a licensed psychologist and certified DBT clinician. We have them for 10 more minutes. Chris is joining us from Shorewood. Chris, hi, what is your experience like?
Well, I get rather ill when I hear of all of these new methods, because when I transferred to Madison, Wisconsin University back in 1947, we were required to take a fourth of a credit in something called relaxation. I thought fourth of a credit, I took a whole credit. We'd go to the top of Baskin Hill, lie down flat, do deep breathing through our nose and slowly out our mouth. And as we did, our arms were heavier and our whole body we went through until we didn't feel anything and we were floating away. Hmm. I practiced that every day. I never slept much in my old age, in my teaching career and television and radio and all kinds of goofy things I did. And I didn't sleep much. But I did that relaxation at least four times a day, where I'd lie down flat wherever I was and do deep breathing. And just a couple of minutes of it brought me back to life. And I always, in the morning when I would drive down Lake Drive, think to myself, oh, what wonderful things are going to happen today. And I would keep that in my mind. And I used to teach it to my students, whether they were little kids or they were high school, exceptional ed. I taught it to teachers learning to be teachers.
You were spreading it. Chris, thank you so much for sharing your experience. Leslie, this technique with Chris for a lifetime.
Yeah, I love that story too. And I love how much work you've done to really spread the knowledge of this skill and your own experience with it, because it has been so powerful and so positive. So yeah, I would say that really encompasses a lot of the different skills that we're teaching in DBT. It sounds like some of that was a experience of mindfulness that shifted the way in which Chris was thinking about things. Also incorporated paced breathing and relaxation.
Henry, how important is it to work at these skills every day?
It is incredibly important. All of the skills in DBT require practice. Just like I wouldn't have someone sit down, you know, practice one song on a piano and then tell them they had a concert the next day, I'm not expecting clients I work with to just learn a skill and be able to use it perfectly the next day. So, you know, some of the skills require practice to put it into our quote unquote muscle memory so that we'll think of it and be able to use it in high intensity situations. Other skills actually get more effective, like breathing, right? Like using paced breathing to calm your body down. We find that that actually works quicker and quicker the more you practice it, and your body kind of learns, oh, I'm breathing now. Okay, it's time to calm down.
Yeah, responding in the moment to it. You know, Henry, telehealth, teletherapy has been a huge resource during the pandemic. How do you see this telehealth in this technology in DBT?
Yeah, it has been a wild ride this past year. We've been doing all of our therapy on telehealth. I think that there is a lot of research going on right now in terms of, are there differences in effectiveness of DBT delivered over telehealth versus in person? And I think we will have to just wait and see what kind of the research says. Anecdotally, I have been finding it to continue to work and be effective. I prefer being in person, but it has been a wonderful opportunity to be able to continue working and delivering DBT in this other way.
Leslie, how about you? What have you found using telehealth?
I fully agree. I've really appreciated the opportunity to expand services in telehealth, because one of the silver linings in this whole thing, although I agree that I prefer to do my work in person, is that we've really been able to cast a wider net and serve people that otherwise did not have access to services. My clinic operates primarily in rural areas, but there are certainly areas that are even more rural than where we have physical locations. And it has been amazing to be able to provide DBT services to people who otherwise wouldn't have access because of those gaps that Henry was highlighting earlier.
We're talking with Leslie Baird-Chapin and Henry Bay. They're both psychologists who practice DBT. Taking your questions and experiences, 800-642-1234. Leslie, let's circle back to Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake and what you see as next steps in making sure DBT continues on this path. What it sounds is like is that it's really starting to grow with staff there.
I think it is. You know, it's really, like we had said in the beginning, it's a pretty comprehensive treatment, and we don't have the full comprehensive delivery in place just yet because it takes time to train people and to practice all of these different things. But the aspects that we have going right now, which focus a lot on skills training and bolstering the underlying relational and behavioral components that are going to support this treatment delivery, I think those things are going really well. As Henry kind of highlighted in his experience, my experience too, is that the youth are responding to these things more readily. They're bolstering their relationships with staff. And, you know, the next steps are largely about getting commitment and bolstering and strengthening that commitment to want to participate in the treatment. So right now we're really focused on that relationship building, helping staff communicate more effectively with youth and be able to respond more effectively in the moment when youth might need some coaching because of some dysregulation, really bolstering behavioral skills and recognizing how to shape more effective behavior.
How do you measure, though, whether DBT is working?
That's a really good question, and it's a really important question. So on that side of program evaluation, we have a few different measures that we'll be using, including, you know, pre and post measures for youth, and then looking at some objective data as well, including how the youth are doing and different sorts of movements and measures regarding, you know, the objective data that we have about, you know, things like conduct reports and, you know, incidents and things like that that we could look at.
Pam is with us from Michigan. Hi, Pam.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. What's your experience very quickly?
I've been learning DBT since December with a wonderful trauma therapist in the Lower Peninsula. And I am thrilled that the good thing has come out of COVID is it's opened up more opportunities for me. And I would just encourage people, if they have an opportunity to learn DBT, to just go for it because it's amazing. It's helped me so much.
Mm, Pam, thank you. Henry, you know, Pam's saying go for it.
Yes. I encourage, if this sounds interesting and you want to start diving into the skills, one option is to buy the skills workbook. Obviously, DBT is delivered as a comprehensive therapy, but sometimes it can be helpful to dip your toe in just to see kind of what we're talking about here by looking up the DBT skills workbook, buying it on Amazon or wherever it's available, and just taking a look at what it offers. And maybe that might lead you to realize this might be a good therapy for you to jump into.
Well, Henry and Leslie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much
for having me.
Henry Bay is a psychologist with the Center for Behavioral Medicine, and Leslie Baird-Chapin is executive director of Paquette Center for Psychological Services. They both use DBT in their practices. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is a suicide prevention network of over 180 local crisis centers operating 24/7. The number is 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-TALK. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.